Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. And what really shouldn't be a controversial show, is probably going to end up being. Because I've spent the greater portion of my morning arguing with people about why Liv Morgan was booed out of the building on SmackDown. It should be as obvious as the nose on your face. But unfortunately, we are living in an era where there are a whole lot of people who just joined the I'm a Pro Wrestling Fan party and immediately think they know everything about the business there is to know. And then there are wrestlers and announcers who think we should be able to feed you cow shit and you should call it chocolate pudding. And if you don't call it chocolate pudding, you're a bad fan. I'm fed up to the rafters with it. You ruined Liv Morgan, and I told you you ruined Liv Morgan the day after SummerSlam when we did our SummerSlam review. I told you you blew it. So who's right now? I don't blame the fans. I don't blame the fans one bit. The way you booked Liv Morgan, she deserved to be booed. Let's recap what you did. Because I had a battle of semantics with a online wrestling expert who said, it's not the booking, it's just one match. No, it's the booking, Einstein. You booked her to win the Money in the Bank match, knowing that she was going to cash in at SummerSlam on Ronda Rousey. Right. You then booked her to come into the ring after Ronda Rousey was clearly injured and nowhere near 100% and still came very, very close to tapping out in the first 10 seconds of cashing in and got a lucky pin. You booked that. You then booked a rematch that went exactly 5 minutes, in which 4 minutes and 40 seconds was her being mauled like an animal, not getting in a punch, looking weak, ineffectual, talentless, and helpless. You then booked her to absolutely tap out before the three count on Ronda Rousey, clearly giving up her title. And then you booked her on the SmackDown following the Survivor of the SummerSlam to lie to the audience and say, I only tapped out after I thought Ronda was counted the three count. That's not true. So whether she ad-libbed that line or she wrote it or they wrote it for her, that's a terrible line. You lied to your fans. That's the face? That's how you want to make a face? How in the world is that making a face out of Liv Morgan? It's making her look like a predator who I'm scared of Ronda Rousey, so I'm going to wait until she's clearly injured before I cash in the Money in the Bank briefcase, and I still almost lost. Then when I won, luckily, in the rematch, I'm mauled like an animal. I tap out and say, yes, take my belt, Ronda, but the referee's too stupid to see it, so I get the victory, and I gladly take it. And then I get on television and lie to the audience, say, I tapped out after the three count, which is clearly not true. That's your face? I told you on the SummerSlam wrap-up show, the way to have done this was to have the referee on the opposite side of Ronda count the three count. Then have Liv Morgan tap. Ronda breaks it thinking she tapped her out, not realizing that her shoulders were down. And then using the excuse, I never heard the referee's three count. All I heard was two. That first count was light and it was on the opposite side of me. I didn't hear it. Because then that's a heel making an excuse. Oh, you didn't know your shoulders were down? Tough shit. That's called being a professional wrestler. You got to know where your shoulders are at all times, Ronda. So now Ronda's the one looking like she's making excuses. I never heard that three count. I think she tapped out before the three count. And we all know, no, that's not true, Ronda. You screwed up. You kept your shoulders down. You didn't want to let go on the submission hold, and it cost you. That's how you put over Liv Morgan. You didn't do it. In your haste to protect Ronda Rousey, you destroyed Liv Morgan. Because Ronda, God forbid, can't look one bit weak. Well, how would that make her look weak if she did exactly what I said? It would just make her look like she was focused on getting the submission and just didn't hear the referee's three count, maybe. Or she got caught up and said, I think my shoulder was up, whatever it happens to be. But the face should never be the one making the excuses. The heel should be the one making the excuses. I don't think that was fair. I think my shoulder was up. I didn't hear the referee count the three count. I think she tapped out before the three count. All of those things. Then if you had Liv Morgan come out on a Friday night and say, look, I was in a ton of pain from that submission hold. But I hung on there until that three count hit. And then, yes, I did tap because it was clearly evident she wasn't going to let me go. But I did not tap out. I did not give up my belt before I knew I had won that match. And Ronda can't live with that because she wasn't as focused as I was. She made a mistake. I capitalized on it. That's the way it went. Fans wouldn't boo her. They boo someone who taps out and says, yeah, I know I lost, but I'm still going to take the belt. Yeah, I know I didn't really win, but I'm still your champion. I'm going to lie and say to everyone who watched the match, I only tapped out after the three count when we all saw that's not the truth. And then you have Einsteins in the wrestling business, literal wrestlers and ring announcers, saying, I'm so disappointed in the crowd. I'm so disappointed in the crowd for turning on Liv Morgan. If you're disappointed, you turn around and look at the writing team who put that horseshit crapola together. And you tell them you're disappointed, but you won't because they're probably half the people signing your paychecks now and you don't want to rock the boat. So don't come to me with your holier-than-thou bullshit about how the fans should just eat your shit and call it applesauce. You did this. Congratulations. You reap what you freaking sow, and this is what you've done. So don't tell me the fans are fickle, Rhea Ripley. Don't tell me you're so disappointed. Whatever that ring announcer girl's name is, which is irrelevant. Take a damn hard look at why it happened so it doesn't happen again. You don't have to be a genius to figure out if you booked Liv Morgan this way for a solid month and then had that crapola piece of crap ending to that match that the fans are going to assume she's a coward, she's feckless, she's weak, she's a liar, and she's ineffectual as a champion. Is that somebody you want to cheer? I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get one person, fan or wrestler, who says, I don't know why this happened. Well, then you're not very bright. Because it's damn obvious why it happened. And I told everybody the day after SummerSlam on our wrap-up show, this was a huge mistake. Huge mistake. Because Ronda Rousey was right. Now, I said, oh, well, attacking Liv Morgan doesn't help. But getting mad at the referee, well, yeah, hey, you could get, you're right. The referee blew it. You should be the champion. And videotape proves it. Could you not have done the opposite and just waited till that three count hit before the tap? Just a microsecond after the three count. So Liv Morgan had a leg to stand on and say, look, I really legitimately, you know, you could have made Liv Morgan a hero. You know how? Have it almost at the same time. Just a microsecond after the three count. And then Liv Morgan could have came out and said, listen, guys, I tapped. I'm not proud of it. I'm also not ashamed of it because Ronda Rousey's tapped a lot of people out. But we're going to watch this videotape, and we're going to do it in slow motion. And if Ronda Rousey tapped me out before that three count, I'm handing her this title because it's not mine. And then if you had Ronda Rousey, just book her one more match, please, one more appearance. Don't have her go crazy at SummerSlam. Then if Ronda Rousey, seeing very clearly, no, we slowed it down, and you actually had your shoulders pinned before the tap out, then if she went crazy and attacked Liv Morgan and attacked the referee, then you would say, that's a freaking sore loser, F Ronda Rousey, right? But not this way. Mike, this was an unforced error, something we all saw coming, as we said on Sunday's show, and they're all looking around like, what? How come the fans turned on them? I'm so disappointed in the fans. How come every time the wrestlers blow it, they blame the fans?
You know, that's the question. And you're right to get on not only Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey, but you're right to get on the writers. I mean, you're going to tell, and you can't really get on Triple H because he just took over. This was written before Triple H took over, right? Triple H and Stephanie took over, right? This whole situation was written before they took over, before they fired everybody, you know, Bruce Prichard, whoever was on the writing team at that point. Before they fired them, that's when this was written. This was planned beforehand. You saw something that was the fruition of something that was probably planned 4, 5, 6 months ago. You know, so you can't
probably
really...
Mike, but let me interject this. I don't give him a pass, and I'll tell you why I don't give him a pass. Dakota Kai said I was called the night before SummerSlam to come back. Bailey said I didn't know we were going to be doing this until just a day or two before SummerSlam. We know Becky Lynch wasn't supposed to turn face until literally they solidified these plans the day before SummerSlam. That was Triple H. So if that's Triple H, getting back Bailey, getting back Dakota Kai, getting back Io Sky, then why didn't Triple H take a look at that goddamn booking and say, this can't happen? If he's going to take credit for Bailey and Sky and Kai, if he's going to take credit for flipping Becky Lynch, that was at SummerSlam too. So if you're doing all these backstage machinations and putting your own rubber stamp on things backstage last minute, why didn't you take a look at that match and say, this is not going to go over well for Liv Morgan? Let's change it to she taps a microsecond after the three count. So you go 1, 2, 3, tap, 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 tap. He could have done that, Mike, so I'm not going to give him a pass. If he's going to take credit for some of SummerSlam, he's going to have to take the blame for some of it.
Right, but my only point, Marcus, was the writing part of this, the writing part, I don't think he wrote this. I don't think Triple H wrote this stuff. Now, could he have changed it? I'm not sure if he could have changed it or not, because, you know, I mean, to me, it seemed to me that this was stuff that was written in stone way before he took over. I mean, I'm sure he probably could have made a big stink about it and said, we're gonna change this. If you're gonna allow me, if you're gonna bring me in and allow me to be a writer and a booker and stuff, and I'm gonna look at this stuff, I'm gonna change it, you know. But I'm not so sure if this wasn't written in stone. I'm not saying I blame him. I don't blame him. I'm just saying I'm not sure if he could have changed it or not, if he had the power.
Well, he's had a creative. He's had a creative. If he can change the path that Becky Lynch's career is going to take with a stroke of a pen, which he did, because we are now told Becky Lynch was supposed to stay heel through SummerSlam. Triple H changed that with a stroke of the pen. There was no plans to bring in Io Sky or Dakota Kai. Triple H changed that. So if he can change those things, and he's head of creative, if he doesn't have time to take a look at the women's title match and say, this isn't going to bode well, then maybe he should spend less time worrying about what Io Sky is going to do and worry a little bit more about what your champion's going to do. So I do blame him. I absolutely blame him. Somebody had to check that off. I don't care if it was written a year ago. If it was written a year ago, then Triple H should have said, I don't care who wrote this. This is not going down this way. It's going to end up with Liv Morgan looking like that heel. Absolutely ridiculous the way this was done. Yeah, it was probably a Vince McMahon-era idea. But it's not something that you can't change if you can change all this other stuff. And if this is really the new era of Triple H, then he needs to get on these workers and tell them, stop blaming the fan. They reacted to what they saw. What they saw was a direct result of our writer. Remember when the fans wouldn't boo Becky Lynch? When the Road Dogg said, we're going to make her our top heel, and everybody's cheering her. Because they were reacting to what they saw. And the Road Dogg and the rest of the writers were wrong, because the way they booked Becky Lynch, the way they had her act, her actions were screaming face. So the fans reacted to that. The fans are only going to react to what you give them. So you got to take the blame. If it doesn't go well, you say, what did we do wrong? What you did wrong. Now, I think Liv Morgan will recover, because I know what they're going to do. They're going to have Ronda Rousey talk shit and try to get, you know, over as a heel. And so by proxy, Liv Morgan will probably resurface as a face. But she's never going to have that same feel, and here's why. You booked her to look like a paper champion. Simple as that. Now, you can do that with a heel. That's traditionally what you do with a heel, right? Heel gets in there against the top babyface, gets bounced around for 8 minutes, barely gets in a move, rolls them up when the referee's not looking and holds the rope, 1, 2, 3, and then slides out of the ring, and the face is like, what the hell just happened? I was beating his ass through 8 minutes of an 8.5-minute match, and this little roll-up, and the referee doesn't catch, you know, him on the ropes. He's laughing at me. I'm not hurt at all. He can barely walk. He's stumbling back to the dressing room with help. I'm up like I've, you know, not even been hurt, saying, what the hell happened? I was ripped off. Yeah. That's the way that works. But if the opposite happens, and the heel is bouncing around the hero for 8 minutes in an 8-minute and 10-second match, and then the face holds on to the rope for the 3 count and rolls out of the ring and says, oh, boy, pulled one over on him. How does that make you look like a face? How does that make you look like you're a proper champion? It doesn't. It makes you look like you're lucky. It makes you look like you're a sneak. And worse yet, if Liv Morgan ad-libbed the line, well, then you got to talk to Liv Morgan. But if Liv Morgan was told to say, I didn't tap out until I thought I heard the 3 count, whoever wrote that line should be fired. Because that's rubbing salt in the wound. That's saying to the fans, you're stupid, and I'm going to tell you a lie. And because you like me, you're going to believe that lie. And when the fans don't believe that lie, then you say, oh, well, the fans are fickle. No, you lied to them. You lied to them. It's outrageous what you did. It's outrageous. If you had to book SummerSlam like that, which you didn't, but let's say you did, then here's how you rehab Liv Morgan. You have her get in the ring and say, God, don't come out slapping hands, smiling. You come out with your belt in your friggin' hands looking depressed. You get in that ring and say, my dream was to be the WWE Women's Champion. I achieved that dream through hard work, dedication to what I was doing, all of my dealing. So I'm going to be honest with you right now. I don't deserve this belt. I took a look at the videotape. I clearly tapped out before the three count. The referee blew the call. I know the referee blew the call. You know the referee blew the call. And I stand here today not looking like a champion. And I don't want to pretend to be a champion. I want to be a champion. So I'm withdrawing. I'm relinquishing the belt. Then if you wanted to have him come out and say, well, listen, we appreciate your honesty. Ronda cannot have this belt. She's been suspended for what she did. So we're not handing no belt to Ronda because she's been suspended till further notice. However, we will have a tournament tonight to decide who your opponent will be at Clash at the Castle. And whoever that happens to be, you two will be fighting for this belt. In the meantime, this belt is held up. That's fair enough. Then if you wanted to be Shayna Baszler, fine. Then it's Shayna Baszler versus Liv Morgan. Nobody's the champion. The winner gets the belt. That makes Liv Morgan look good. That makes Liv Morgan look like an honest face, which is what you want to have happen. Plus, you get the extra added bonus of, there's no champion right now. We're going to crown one at Clash at the Castle. How in the world, Todd, is that not a better idea than what they did?
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, you have a tournament. The winner of the tournament be the champion or the number one contender for that SmackDown Women's title. And like you said, with Liv Morgan, when she first won that belt, we've all been saying she's not ready to be a women's champion. She's not ready yet. And she's still
if your women's champion has to be mauled for 4.5 straight minutes by Ronda Rousey, then you obviously don't believe that she's a woman's champion, because Becky Lynch wouldn't have been mauled for 4 straight minutes. Charlotte wouldn't have been mauled for 4 straight minutes. Bianca Belair wouldn't have been mauled for 4 straight minutes. Mike, what I just said about having that tournament, which they kind of did anyway on SmackDown to discover the number one contender, could have been Liv Morgan saving grace and made an interim. There's no interim champion. The belt's held up. Liv Morgan definitely is going to be in the match, but we don't know who her opponent will be. How is that not a better idea than this train wreck they did?
That is a better idea. That's the thing. And how many times over the past several years have we booked something on this show, basically fantasy booking something on this show, that was a much better idea than what they actually did? Think about it. Let's go back in the history of the WWE. Let's go back in the history of the WWE. James Ellsworth comes in, right? And he starts wrestling, does this, he's with Carmella and all this stuff. And at one point, he being the underdog, beats AJ Styles, right?
Right.
AJ Styles comes out and says what he says, and then boom, you know, he was the heel, and they made him the underdog face, right? 1-2-3 Kid, when he beat Razor Ramon, that one time, and Razor Ramon, after the match, had that look on his face like, how'd this guy beat me? And then the next week he comes back in there and he said he starts to yap his mouth off, and like being the heel that he was at the time, yap his mouth off, being disingenuous and all that stuff, making, well, X-Pac or 123 Kid look like the face. They played both of those two situations right.
Yeah. Yeah, and they played this one exactly wrong. They made Liv Morgan look horrible. Look horrible. And then what's even worse than all of this is that at the end of the day, they turn around and blame the fans for their own reactions. Fans just react to what you give them. So your first reaction should be, why are the fans booing Liv Morgan? Oh, because we made it look like she tapped out and really isn't the champion, really couldn't hang with Ronda Rousey. We probably shouldn't have done that. Yeah, you probably shouldn't have. Oh, because we made her lie to the fans and say, I didn't tap out until after the three count, which is a lie. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Oh, because we had her mauled around the ring, we booked the match that Ronda takes 99.9% of the match and you just get lucky at the end. Yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that. Yeah, you probably shouldn't have. And we have booked better things on this show, and I got news for you. We're 30 minutes into this show, and we booked a much better scenario for Liv Morgan in 30 minutes than the WWE did in 2 months, because that means your writers suck. Writers' jobs is to get over who you want them to get over. If you want Liv Morgan to get over, you have to make her look good. I never would have booked the match to be all Ronda Rousey like that. I would have booked the match exactly the opposite. I would have booked the match that the first couple of minutes of the match, Ronda Rousey looked terrible, and she's getting really frustrated, and the announcers could be, oh, Ronda Rousey greatly underestimated Liv Morgan. Ronda Rousey came in here thinking this was going to be a cakewalk, let's face it. She did not realize the determination of Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan is taking it to her, and Ronda's getting frustrated. If you want that same ending, okay, but then the next night, you have to have Liv Morgan, or the next SmackDown, you have to have Liv Morgan relinquish that title, have the powers that be say it doesn't go to Ronda because Ronda's been suspended for her actions. So there'll be an interim, there is no interim championship. It'll be held up, and it will be decided at Clash at the Castle. Tonight, we will have a tournament. Liv Morgan's automatically in, and the last person standing in that gauntlet match or whatever you wanted to do, that will indeed be your opponent. Fair enough. Then Liv Morgan could have said, well, let's ask the crowd. Is that fair enough to you guys? And, you know, the whole crowd's going to be on her side. And they're going to be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's okay. Well, then if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. I accept that. There you go. Liv Morgan's still your big hero. You can't think of that. Why? We shouldn't have to think of it. Einstein, it's pathetic. And don't you dare blame the fans for their reaction. How dare you? That's what pisses me off the most. At least own it. At least say, yeah, we did a horrible job of booking Liv Morgan. We understand why the fans are a little torn here. We'll try to fix this. No. You have them all get on their Twitter accounts and say, fans are fickle, fans are stupid, fans are dumb, I'm disappointed in the fans. Then go get a different job. Tired of the fans getting the shit for everything. You screw up a match, the fans called me out on it. You screw up a move, the fans are rude because they called me out on it. Grow up. It's so ironic that Liv Morgan's like, I take responsibility for my own shit. No, you don't. That was another bad line. You don't take responsibility for your own shit if you clearly lost and you say you won. Unbelievable. That's just unbelievably bad writing. Just unbelievably bad. Now, Mike's right. There's nothing they can do about Triple H couldn't do anything about her winning the Money in the Bank. That was done before Triple H. Couldn't probably do anything against the Ronda Rousey booking of the SummerSlam match as far as the matchup is concerned, but he sure could have changed the ending. He didn't have to change the winner, but he could have changed how it went down. And he sure as hell had full control over SmackDown on Friday, where she lied. So let's say Triple H had nothing he could do about SummerSlam, which I say isn't true. And I have good evidence to back that up because he changed other matches. But let's say he couldn't. Okay, well, SmackDown's your baby now, right? So you tell Liv Morgan to go out there and give up that belt. You know the fans are all going to be like, no, don't do it, don't do it. So that's even better because that's getting them on her side. And her saying, no, if I deserve to be the champion, I have to earn it. And I didn't earn it at SummerSlam. I could never feel like your champion knowing what happened. Is that not a great face move? Then you have that gauntlet match, same exact match. You don't have to change a damn thing. And it's Shayna Baszler versus Liv Morgan for that title. Then you got Ronda, who could really make fun of it and say, oh, poor Liv Morgan. She realizes she's not a champion. She realizes I beat her ass. She realizes she's just holding it until I get back. And all of her stupid fans are encouraging her to win it back, as if the second I get reinstated, I'm not going to break her arm. So all of you fans who said, no, don't give up the belt, and I hope she wins it back at Clash at the Castle, all you're doing is rooting for her to get her arm broke, because that's exactly what's going to happen. Then Ronda's the heel, right? It's so damn easy, and that's why it frustrates the hell out of me. And when you screw up, it's not my fault. The fans are fickle. Jeez. Please. Now, the other big thing, of course, that happened on SmackDown was the end where Karrion Kross and Scarlett came back together. Now, I'm going to say this. I'm glad to have Karrion Kross back. I think he was terribly mishandled the first time. I mean terribly, terribly, terribly handled the first time. How do you bring in a guy with that good of a gimmick, that big of a presence, and not have, like, little vignettes before saying, coming soon to WWE, Karrion Kross? No, he didn't. He just, here he is, and he lost. Lost to Jeff Hardy. And remember the reasoning for that? Oh, fans, don't jump the gun. There's a bigger story to be told here. You just wait and see how this plays out. And then you'll be saying, we're so sorry. We doubted you. Oh, great and powerful WWE writers. Yeah, where was the big story? You didn't have one. You lied. And you wasted a good talent. And you didn't put him together with Scarlett, which is a major part of his act. Major part. And you put him in a dime store Halloween costume. But now let me say this. I don't like the way he came back, and here's why. He doesn't look like Karrion Kross. Shave your head again. When you looked a little meaner, you look like just some dude from Brooklyn. You look like the average guy that's going to, like, a football game. I thought you're supposed to be this dark, evil, gothic, weird guy. Well, you don't look like it. And looks are a big part of it. I didn't like the way he was dressed. Got to shave his head again. Got to go back to looking like that mean, crazy individual that he was in NXT. So I hope they correct that. As far as putting the clock in on Roman Reigns, I like that part. However, it's going to confuse the fan. He attacked Drew McIntyre but he's clearly going after Roman Reigns' title. Well, does that make him a heel or a face? So already you are getting that writing that's like, hey, what are we supposed to think? I don't like it. Now, I've heard they might add him to the Magic Clash at the Castle, or they may have a three-way match down the road for just one belt because USA is losing their mind that Roman Reigns isn't on the show every week. But the bottom line of the situation is you've got to clearly show who he is. And I don't think you did it. See, you're going to have a problem because he attacks Drew McIntyre. Okay, he's a heel. And then he gives the warning to Roman Reigns. Okay, well, Roman Reigns is a heel. So now you're stuck in this situation where, well, what are we supposed to do? I have a newsflash. They're going to root for Roman Reigns. Just so you know. So if your attempt here is this is the guy who's going to turn Roman Reigns' face, okay, but I thought you were going to wait till WrestleMania, after WrestleMania for that. The fans are going to be on Roman's side. So this is a little bit confusing, Mike, and I wish they had had him re-enter in a different scenario.
Right, and think about this. You know, think about it. Here's, yeah, it's confusing and, you know, and all that stuff. But think about this, okay? Sasha, whatever her name is, Scarlett is a wrestler. She has been a wrestler. So you could very easily see when they eventually bring Naomi back, and they're going to bring her back, you could very easily have a couple of mixed tag team matches between Scarlett and Karrion Kross and Naomi and either Roman Reigns or Uso or whoever, you know, because that could be, this could be a way, this could be a way to put for Triple H to put his stamp on things by saying we're actually going to do this thing with Naomi and put her with the Bloodline. This could be a way of, for him to put his stamp on something, you know, because we know that up until the point when Vince left, they weren't going to do that. And then, of course, we had the problems with Naomi and Sasha and all that stuff. If this is going to be if they're putting the countdown on, if they're using her to put the countdown on him and she's there, then you got to. And she's going to, you know, she's going to get involved in some of those matches between either the Usos or Roman Reigns. You know that's going to happen. So, and Roman Reigns, if they're going to end up flipping Roman Reigns anyway, right? Roman Reigns is not going to want to hit Scarlett, right? So he's going to have somebody to do it for him, right?
Yeah, well, hear me out on this one. How about if they played it this way? Nothing happens on SmackDown, except Drew McIntyre comes out and they get into a brawl. We know Drew McIntyre is not winning the belt at Clash at the Castle. After Drew McIntyre loses, and Roman Reigns is celebrating with Paul Heyman in the ring, those lights go out, you get that big raven thing flying on the Titantron, and only Scarlett comes out with the smoke and the music and puts the clock in the ring and walks away. You going to tell me people aren't going to tune in Monday night to see what the hell happened? That's bigger than if he shows up and beats up Drew McIntyre. That's actually bigger. Because it's going to draw that next audience because you're going to say, oh, shit. Well, that means he's back. We haven't seen him yet, but that means he's back. And he's targeting Roman Reigns. That would be way bigger than what they did. So once again, I think that the shock of seeing him is like, oh, wow, cool, he's back. That's a big moment, but you didn't get the most out of that moment. If you really wanted to get the most out of that moment, you do what I just said. You wait till Clash at the Castle. You wait till the end, and you close that pay-per-view with that sand ticking through that hourglass. And the Usos and Roman and Paul Heyman looking confused. That's what you do. Todd, that would have made a much better impact than just attacking Drew McIntyre.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, where they have the video entrance of Karrion Kross, but not having him come back out to show up like that. You have Scarlett comes out with the hourglass.
Yep.
They should have done that the right way. They should have done that the right way.
That is absolutely the right way to handle that, Mike, and I think it would have been a much bigger moment overall.
Yeah, they handle it that way. Then he comes back on Monday night or whatever with his head shaved, and they say they get in the ring and they have him and Scarlett do a promo or whatever, or have Roman Reigns come in there and do a promo and say what the hell does this mean and all that stuff, and then at the end of the promo you have him come back out again, have him come out with his head shaved and with the entrance and the smoke and Scarlett and all that stuff, and there you go, you know.
I think they're trying to rush it, Mike. I think they try to rush these things. They're like, oh, let's get him in here, and maybe we can get him in the title picture right away. Calm down. If I were a writer, I would have made the pitch, can we keep this going for a month before he's ever shown? Keep Scarlett coming down. Keep her putting the clock in the ring. But don't show him yet. Let's just keep waiting and waiting. Anticipating when is it going to be. And then maybe when the clock runs down initially, that's when he attacks Roman Reigns. Who knows? There's many things you could do, but the anticipation of when is he coming would have been a hell of a lot better than I just attacked Drew McIntyre. Because now, okay, what are we going to have out of this? Karrion Kross and a Drew McIntyre match in which I guess Karrion Kross has to win and then Drew McIntyre is irrelevant? I wouldn't have put Drew McIntyre involved in this in any way, shape, or form. Let Drew have his match at Clash at the Castle. Lose. And then have Karrion Kross, or at least Scarlett, make their debut there with the clock and take it from there. That's going to be the next big contender for Roman Reigns. Makes sense to me. Now, some would argue, well, that kind of makes him a face. Maybe not. I mean, like I said, I think a lot of people are going to cheer for Roman Reigns. So maybe it makes Reigns a face. But at least it would be in your perspective. This way, we're like, well, what are we going to do? If he's in the ring with Roman Reigns, are we going to cheer when he's beating up Roman and boo when he's beating up Drew? And that's too convoluted. It's too convoluted. Doesn't help McIntyre much either, by the way. So I'm not really into how they debuted him. I'm glad he's back. I'm glad they're going to handle him the right way. I wish they had debuted him better. I wish they had some writers there who actually were writers, who understands the power of the dramatic moment more than the immediate gratification. You know what that would be like? That would be like signing Bray Wyatt and saying, he's just going to pop up on Raw or SmackDown. And you're like, wait a minute. You only got one good pop out of that. The fans didn't even know he was going to show up. So that didn't improve the ratings this week. It might improve the ratings next week. But what would happen if we showed little signs that he might show up? Little tiny things like, you know, the Haggis there in the audience. Or a little Sister Abigail spotting puppet backstage. Every week the fans would tune in saying, this is the week, this is the week, this is the week. You'd have ratings improve 3, 4, 5 weeks instead of just one. You got to squeeze the most you can, the most juice you can out of the orange. You understand? You can buy an orange and take one squeeze out of it and throw it away and say, well, I gotta, or you can get every damn piece of juice out of that orange. The choice is yours. The WWE always seems to take the least amount of orange juice before they throw the damn orange away. And this Karrion Kross thing is no different. Could have got a lot better stuff out of him. To be perfectly honest with you, I wouldn't have even been opposed if he came in as a face. That gimmick's going to go over anyway. If you're going to do that whole Scarlet entrance with the music and the gimmick and everything, that's going to go over. Fans are going to like that. So you may as well, if that's the case. It would be the perfect foil for Roman Reigns because you'd say, well, okay, now Roman's really going to get it. This guy's bloodthirsty, this, that, and the other thing. He just happens to be somebody we're cheering now. You could have made a good argument that the face turn wouldn't have been the worst thing for him. Again, you took one squeeze of the orange and threw it away, so let's see what happens. They can't handle them worse than they did before, so that's the good news. They'll definitely handle them better. But listen, if I get that orange named Karrion Kross, I'm squeezing every piece of juice out of that, okay? There's going to be anticipation for weeks of his comeback. What does the clock mean? Why is only Scarlett there? How is this going to play out? Does the clock mean it's ticking for Roman? Does it mean it's clicking until his debut? What the hell does it mean? You get a lot out of that. And I'm surprised the writers didn't make a pitch for that. Having said that, here's what we were wrong about. They are going to bring back the women's tag team titles. For the life of me, I don't know how. This is a mistake. It's done because you want to prove that we are equal in every way, and if we have men's tag team champions, we must have women. Bullshit. You don't have enough women to make this tag team division mean a goddamn thing, even when you bring back Sasha and Naomi, which you are going to be doing. Who are they going to go against? Let me guess. Nikki Cross and whatever her name is. That's been irrelevant for whatever. That's it, right? Maybe they'll reform Natalia and Tamina. Oh, boy. Come on, folks. Do you want that? I sure as hell don't. I sure as hell don't. By the way, I don't have any injury update, but is Queen Zelina alive? How long are you going to be off television for an injury? 5 years? I mean, my God, I don't remember the last time I seen her. It's going to have to be all hands on deck if you're going to have a women's tag team division because, man, oh, man, are you short on the women? Really, really short. We're going to get these mixed, thrown together teams. It's like, oh, you and you. There's no reason for you to be a tag team, but you're going to be. I don't want to see it. Just concentrate on a really strong women's division. To hell with the tag team titles. Not necessary. It's absolutely not necessary. And they're doing this to appease Sasha Banks and Naomi, who don't deserve to be appeased. You took your ball and you went home. So I'm not digging this, Mike. I don't see this being a good thing for the WWE or good matches coming out of it.
Right. Unless they're thinking about, you know, Io Sky, Io Shirai, whatever you want to call her, and Dakota Kai, you know, basically Kai and Sky, whatever you want to call it, you know, putting them together as a tag team. You know, the leader of the group is Bayley, and Bayley is the singles person. I mean, until either Kai or Sky builds themselves, until they build them as a singles person, you gotta assume that they're gonna be a tag team until they do that, until they build them as singles wrestlers, right? So what are they gonna do? I mean, I mean, they could bring back some, they could hire some people, put them together in tag teams, whatever. But do they want to do that? Do they want to spend the money to hire some extra bodies to put together in tag teams? Do they want to bring back the two Aussie women? I'm blanking on the name of the team now.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah. They're not going to bring him back. Look, here's the problem. You're absolutely right. That's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to have Sasha Banks and Naomi against Dakota Kai and Io Sky. Yeah. So what? So that's one good contender. So what? And when we get tired of watching them fight, who are we going to get? The Iconics is who you're talking about. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't see. I think one of them or maybe both retired permanently from wrestling. I just don't see women's tag teams. If that was the case and you were so gung-ho about having a women's tag team division, why didn't you just start forming some tag teams before you make this announcement? Let us see some tag teams first. Maybe bring in a tag team specifically. This is a women's tag team. They don't wrestle single. On rare occasions, maybe. Why? It was a mess originally. It's going to be a mess now. Todd, I don't necessarily want to see a women's tag team title because I just don't see enough contenders.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said. And like you said, back then were the tag team, the women's tag team division. Back in the 80s, the WWE at the time, they had a few tag teams in the ladies' division. I remember the Jumping Bomb Angels, the Glamour Girls, tag teams like that.
Yeah.
And now you don't have those tag teams anymore.
No, I don't think they have enough to fit the bill. I mean, you don't need seven, but you need four at least, right? And you need four that are solid tag teams, that you say these are solid tag teams. Look at the men's division. You don't have it. You just don't have it. Now, having said that, let's talk a little bit more about this USA thing. Apparently, USA is not happy. They want a champion on their show weekly. And the word is that there may be some kind of a deal being struck to take one of the belts away from Roman Reigns prior to WrestleMania. To have a match strictly for one title and have that one title won by someone else. So that you do have a champion on the show pretty much every week. Do I think it's a good idea? Yes and no. Yes, I do think it's a good idea to have a champion on your show pretty much every week. No, I do not think it's a good idea to take it away from Roman before WrestleMania. Absolutely do not. And if you are going to do that, then I would do it in a very sneaky way. I would have a match booked between whoever you want to be the champion and Roman Reigns. And when that person pulls that upset victory, you could have Paul Heyman say, you could do it right now. Because if Theory was to cash in on Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman could literally make a point, you only get to cash in against one title. You don't get to say I'm cashing in against the SmackDown champion and also the Intercontinental champion, do you? No. You get one shot at one title because Roman's the other one. You don't get both. He has an argument. It does entitle you to one shot against the one champion. It doesn't say two. And he still has both belts. It's not like they changed it to one belt. They never changed it to one belt. So there could be a little bit of, work in there where Paul Heyman says, well, I'm smart enough legally to have backed that up and made sure that no matter what happens with this money in the bank, my client's still going to hold one title. That could work, Mike.
It really could, and that's the thing. I mean, look, we know Theory is eventually going to cash that in, and they want him with some championship, some bigger championship than the U.S. title, right? We know that. We know it's coming. So, yeah, that your scenario holds water, and it definitely holds a lot of water. Depends on which championship they want, you know. Now, is it up to USA to tell them we want the WWE championship or we want the Universal championship to make the choice of which belt? I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I don't know. I would presume that they would have some say in it. They want their champion on their show, so. You know, it would be their belt probably. Yeah, I mean, at least you could do that and make Paul Heyman look like, wow, he's sneaky. It doesn't take much away from Roman, especially if it was cashed in on in a ridiculous manner in which obviously Roman Reigns is unconscious. There is no real fight. It's just Roman laying there with Theory running down and making a cover. I mean, you could argue that that would be okay. And it would give Paul Heyman a little bit of credibility of, wow, that was smart. You know, he backed his client up. I don't know. Speaking of, though, some legal troubles, let's go to the Vince McMahon thing briefly, because people, I don't understand where people's heads are. So I'm going to try to clarify this, because I've been getting a lot of people saying, Vince McMahon is not running things. You can clearly see he's not running things. Triple H is bringing back words that Vince McMahon banned. Therefore, Vince McMahon's not running things. I guess I'm not making myself clear enough. I never said Vince McMahon was controlling what you see on the television screen. I never said Vince McMahon is still continuing to control creative, control words that are banned, control what you can say and what you can't say, what you can wear and what you can't wear. He's not doing that anymore. But if you think that the man who owns the controlling shares of a billion-dollar corporation is not still making business decisions, not wrestling decisions, business decisions, on where this business is going, you're crazy. You have no idea what you're talking about. Promise you, he is. If not, why doesn't he just sell all of his shares? If he really wants out, why doesn't he say, I'm failing all of my shares? There's no need for me to have controlling interest in this company anymore. I'll just sell up all my shares until I only have, you know, an amount that's comparable to a normal person. No, he has controlling interest. And he has not sold them. Why do you think that might be? So obviously, he's making business decisions. Financial type decisions. He's making them. No, they're not running back saying, do you want us to put Karrion Kross back in the GIMP outfit? No, he's not doing that. But when it comes to, we're signing major contracts with this country for a developmental whatever, yeah, he is still doing that. Yes, he is. Promise you he is. He might not be doing it under his name, but he's doing it through Stephanie. Simple as that. Having said that, I do want to talk a little bit about AEW because there might be some trouble here. I'm hearing that the TV network is really, really, really trying to cut their expenses down. Remember, they were bought. And TBS, TNT, channels like that, they're going to consider like third-rate channels now. They're even cutting like HBO Max. They're cutting all kinds of things. Laying off people, doing all kinds of money-saving things. They don't want to save just a little money, folks. They want to save tons and tons and tons of it. Now, that does not mean they're going to kick AEW off their channel. The chances of them doing that are pretty small since it's still one of their highest rated shows on that particular network. But they're not going to be giving him no great big television deal. So Tony Khan's deal is coming up. And we had all anticipated, well, Tony Khan, in order to make money, after laying out all this money for major contracts, he's going to have to say, look, I'm bringing in about 1 million people. I want a big raise from this network for our content. You ain't getting it. You'll be lucky if you get the same. With the cuts that they're proposing, there is no way on earth they're going to give you a raise. No way on earth. And if you feel you need it to keep running your business in the way that you're running it, you need to look for another TV network. Because they've already clearly said we're going to spend as much money as we possibly can on keeping the NBA. That's our main focus. Whatever we got to give to the NBA, that we're going to give it to them. And if that means cutting other programs, if that means other people got to take cuts in how much we're giving them for their content, so be it. Because our main focus is on the NBA. That's not good news. Tell you right now, that's not good news. Because if Tony Khan comes with his hat in his hand saying, I think we deserve another, 40% increase in revenue from you, they're going to be like, yeah, there's the door. He's not getting anything more than what he got. And if that's not adequate, then now's the time, Tony. You should be shopping your show. Don't worry about putting a Ring of Honor show on. Worry about where AEW is going to be. The powers that be say, yeah, we're not paying for it. This could turn pretty serious. I mean, I don't know how serious it's going to be. I think they want to keep AEW, but I don't think they're going to give them any major money to do it, Mike, not with all the cuts they're making.
Right, and think about this. They just paid how many millions of dollars for the NHL?
Oh, my God, yes. And
you know,
the NBA is going to be even worse.
Right, and that's the thing. When you're cutting, look, HBO Max was where a lot of the superhero things were happening, you know. Just like they're doing the same thing with the CW, because The Flash is coming to an end, and a lot of the other shows that were on the CW that had a lot to do with superheroes are coming to the end. Even the thing the Walker show. The remake of Walker, Texas Ranger, and a few other shows all came to an end, right? Because they were looking to cut salaries. And even though the Flash is still drawing a high rating for the CW, they're going to end it. You know?
Yep. Yeah, this worries me only because I understand where Tony Khan was coming from. Tony Khan had to sign a deal to get on television, no question about it. Without television, AEW was never going to succeed. He got a decent TV deal, probably not a great one, but a decent one that he said, well, you know, I'm going to break even or maybe make a little money. I can make money on the pay-per-views. I can make money on the merchandise. It's not the end of the world if I'm not making mad money on the TV deal. Because if I can get the ratings up when my contract comes up, I then will be making mad money. See, that's what happened with the WWE. Say what you want about Nick Khan. But Nick Khan got $1 billion out of Fox. $1 billion. Astronomical amount of money for a TV deal. So the WWE knew that, and they said, okay, well, you know what? When our deal comes up and we're going to chop around SmackDown, we're going to get a really good deal, and boy, did they ever. Tony Khan kind of thought the same thing. He didn't think he was going to get $1 billion. But Tony Khan, I'm sure, thought, oh, well, I'm going to be one of the top shows on their network, and they're going to want me to stay, and they're going to say, we'll double what we gave you last time. I mean, they gave it to him last time not knowing whether he'd draw 50 people, right? So now he can say, look, it's pretty much close to 1 million every week. I think we deserve something. It's not going to happen now. So now he's stuck with, you're either basically going to stay the same contract where you're not making a ton, or you got to shop your show. So it's going to be very interesting to see what Tony Khan does. If he plays hardball with them and says, either the Rays or I go, and I'll find another network, or if he says we'll continue to stay there for 1 year maybe, just do a one-year deal at the same price because he doesn't have another network right now lined up, or if he says I'm going to shop all my shows at once, Ring of Honor included, to one big network, which is very possible. There are options he can do, but it's going to be very, very interesting to see where this goes, Todd, because, you know, TNT and TBS, they're not going to be given top priority now under this new regime.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said about these shows being canceled. I was just on Wikipedia as of right now. The Flash and that show Walker is still running as of right now.
Yeah, they're doing their contract. They've got to fulfill the contract, but they're not renewing them. See, that's the thing. I mean, tomorrow they could say AEW's canceled. They still got some time. They got to fulfill the contract. So it'll be very interesting to see where they go from here. Very, very interesting. And this is going to test how good of a businessman Tony Khan is, because he's going to have to play hardball, folks. You can't go through 3 years and then say we're going to take a cut to keep our show on. That makes it look like you failed. You can't ask for more money than a network's willing to give you, or they'll just boot you off and you have nobody. So now is the time when Tony Khan's got to get on his horse and say, let me shop this around. So at least I can come back to them and say, this is what I've been offered. Will you offer more? There is a chance that they might. If they think, well, he's going to go up against in the ratings on this competing network and he might hurt us, maybe they will open up the pocketbook and give him a little more. I don't know if that's true, though. I have this weird feeling that they're not too into wrestling. So if I was Tony Khan, I would be on the phone just to make sure that when my contract is up, I had a place to go, because I'm not 100% sure they're going to get negotiated with in good faith. I mean, no matter how good you do, if your CEOs are like, we don't really want wrestling on our network, well, then you got a problem, right? Tomorrow, somebody took over USA Network, totally different than who has them now, and said, we just don't want wrestling on our network. Well, the WWE would be shopping around. They'd have to, right? What are you going to do? It's not going to happen, but, I mean, theoretically, you'd have to, right? So we'll see what Tony Khan does. Mike, what do you think the most likely scenario there is? Do you think they move, or do you think they play hardball and get at least a minimal raise?
I think they're going to try for the minimal raise first, and then if they can't get Discovery and you know, Turner to give them the raise, then they'll go and search. And look, here's the deal. Let's just say for the sake of argument that what you said happens with the WWE and USA and NBC Universal comes up and says, well, we're not going to give you this money. You're going to tell me that, like, FX, who is tied with Fox, who's basically tied with Disney now, because that's who owns them, FX and Fox and FXX and the rest of them, that's who owns them is Disney. You're going to tell me that Disney isn't going to come up with the money to give to the WWE? If NBC Universal says, we're not giving it to you? You know?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Derek is saying, well, do you think maybe somebody like CNN or MSNBC would want? No, they don't. But let me throw out a name I don't think will ever happen. But you got to remember, Tony Khan is connected with, you know, the sports world, right? What about ESPN? ESPN doesn't have any pro wrestling on it. They do, you know, they gave out an ESPY and stuff to Cody Rhodes and things, but they covered pro wrestling, but they don't have any legitimate pro wrestling show. ESPN could potentially. I mean, Tony Khan has some credibility in the sports, quote, unquote, world with the football and everything. He has connections. It's possible. It's possible. I think it's a long shot, but it's possible. So, again, this could be a blessing in disguise for Tony Khan. It could be a bad situation. I don't know which. I don't know which. What I do know is that they better be making plans immediately because, as Mike was saying, the cuts that are being made here, and some of them don't even seem to make that much sense. Some shows that are doing extraordinarily well, they're just saying, yeah, well, we're not renewing it. Wow. Wow. So don't feel safe. There's no reason to feel safe. Very strange situation, but this is what ends up happening sometimes, you know, when you're on these type of networks. And this is why when you get a deal like the WWE got for $1 billion for X amount of years, you're pretty much set, Todd, and you don't have to worry.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about the Tony Khan shopping, try to shop around for another network. Like you said, ESPN. I remember back in the late 80s, early 90s, they had pro wrestling on there every week. It was Vern Gagne's AWA promotion.
Yeah.
And if he does...
Hang on there a minute, folks. I'm being told we have... Okay, sorry about that, folks. We had to reboot. Had a little bit of a thunder bumper here. Anyway, we'll see where Tony Khan ends up, Mike, but the one good thing, if you're an AEW fan, is he does have connections. You're going to have to give him that. So I don't think he'll be exactly, you know, flat on his butt.
Right, and here's something else to think about. Who owns ESPN? You know? And who owns Fox?
Yeah. Right.
Disney? And... could it be considered that if Disney gets AEW, that they're kind of cornering the market in wrestling programming? You know, think about it.
Well,
and,
you're absolutely right. You make a good point. This is where Vince McMahon normally would try to block that. I don't know if Triple H will. I don't know what will end up happening. See, this is where I say Vince McMahon is still making some decision. When it comes to things like this, would Vince McMahon say they're violating contract, they're blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that? I don't know. Would he sick lawyers on him? I don't know. Would he tell Stephanie to do that? I don't know. Because I don't know what they want their perception to be to the public now. Do they want to change their perception and say, well, if they want to be on ESPN, fine. I don't know. It's an interesting point. I guess we will see how much they've changed. I guess we will. So that's very, very interesting. If you're an AEW fan, I wouldn't worry too much. I'm sure they're going to end up somewhere. Hopefully maybe at a better network where they can possibly get more views. I'm not an AEW hater. I don't like some of the things they do, especially the way Tony Khan handles some of the situations. And I'm not always a fan of everyone who other people think are awesome. I'll give you a case in point. Before the show started today, I had a debate on a wrestling site where people were trying to tell me that Finn Balor is the greatest heel in history. Finn Balor's the greatest heel? Oh, if you don't think he's the greatest heel, you've never seen him in Japan. Yeah, I saw him in Japan. I saw a lot of American wrestlers go over to Japan who couldn't cut it in the United States and be huge because the Japanese people are accepting of that kind of, oh, it's an American wrestler, cool. We're going to take to him immediately. Finn Balor is not a good heel. Finn Balor is a terrible heel. The reason he's a terrible heel is he's 5'6", 170 pounds, and nobody should be intimidated by him. That's number one. Number two, he cannot use the mic. Oh, he can get on there and say, I'll do this to you, and that. Yeah, nobody cares. It doesn't come off as genuine. It doesn't come off as real. He's a terrible actor. He has no facial expressions. He's just not a good heel. Finn Balor's only worth, in my opinion, is as an underdog babyface who is smaller than the rest but still fights hard and somehow manages to get it done a la Rey Mysterio. That's his work. Why do you think they gave him the demon character so he didn't have to talk on the mic? What'd the demon ever say? I think they don't give him the stick constantly. When you're outshined in your own clique by Rhea Ripley on the mic, I'm sorry, you're not good. Now, you can worship at the cult of Finn Balor all you want and say, he's wonderful, he's marvelous, he's great. Well, then, okay, I'm glad you enjoy him. But don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining. Don't sit here and tell me he's great on the mic. He's not. And I don't like fans who do that. There's no bigger AJ Styles fan than me. Me, who the greatest wrestler in the world is today. I would say AJ Styles without even stopping. But I know he's not good on the mic. I know you can't give him super long interviews and complex emotions to show. He can't do it. He's not going to do it well. So you got to play to his strength. When you play to his strength, he's perfectly fine. And in the ring, he's exactly what he says he is. He's phenomenal. If you want to play to Finn Balor's strength, Finn Balor's strength is the underdog, who doesn't really have that much of a gimmick, other than if you really super piss him off, you might bring out that demon character. That's all he needs. To try to give him the stick and say, you're going to handle the main part of the talking in a click. He didn't do it well in Japan. I don't care what anybody says. And he's not doing it well here. Why in the world, if he could do it well in Japan, can't he do it well here? How come when he's on the mic, he's stumbling and stammering and stumbling around? If he was so articulate. Because he wasn't. If you want to put him in a group where everybody's good, then he looks good. Yeah, he looks better. Absolutely. But if you want to put him on his own as the leader, he's the guy who talks the most, no, it's not going to work. And it's not working now. When he was in charge of Judgment Day and Finn Balor, it's day and night. When Edge took the microphone, people were like, okay, let's hear what he's got to say. Now Finn takes it and people are like, whatever. He's got nothing to say. That goes to show you the difference. If the guy was a good heel, he could take any situation and make it good. Edge was able to. How come Edge is able to? If Finn is so talented, how come Edge is able to do that? How come Edge can be the bad guy, the good guy, the in-between guy, the whatever guy, and he can take that microphone and sell it? Finn can't. Finn get a better lot in life with Triple H at creative, maybe. But I've always said Finn doesn't deserve the better lot in life. What does he deserve? He has a move set of six moves. He does constantly, same six moves, in the same order. His finisher is terrible because it doesn't take into consideration the weight of your opponent. If he's diving in there, landing on Mustafa Ali, I could see him hurting Mustafa Ali with the bombs away to the point where he could pin him. How about if it's Otis? Otis is supposed to sell that? It doesn't make sense. So, no, I don't think Finn Balor is a great heel. I think the Judgment Day has been a disappointment. Rhea Ripley's trying her ass off and doing the best job out of the three. But this is going nowhere fast, folks. It lost its heart when it lost Edge. So, again, you know, we'll see what happens with some of these guys that are quote-unquote Triple H guys, Mike. We've seen Ricochet get a big victory over Baron Corbin, but Ricochet's another Finn Balor type. Okay in the ring, but when you give them the stick and something to do, that's when they fall apart.
Right, and think about this. Butch was okay on the mic, but now he's being the quiet guy, the quiet crazy guy, and he's eating it up, right? You know, and so when you put AJ Styles with Gallows and Anderson, they obviously had chemistry together, right? And the whole
right.
We're gonna beat up John Cena, right? We're gonna beat up John Cena and all that stuff. Same thing when you put Gallows and Anderson when they went to Japan, when you put them with Finn Balor, you know, they helped mask the fact that he wasn't good on the stick because they're very good on the stick, both of them, Gallows and Anderson.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up because that's an excellent point. Finn Balor was passable when he had people there who could feed him lines, who could feed him, material that he could. That's an excellent point. When you have guys who are saying, well, I'm not supposed to be the leader, but I can sort of jawjack here and feed the lines to AJ, feed the lines to Finn, they look better. You're right. You're absolutely right. When Finn Balor got to do it on his own, and he's got Damian Priest, who ain't feeding him no lines, he can't do it. He can't do it. I don't care if you're the biggest Finn Balor fan in the world. Good for you. I'm glad you enjoy him. But don't lie. Just say, listen, he's bad on the mic. He's great in the ring, in my opinion. Fine. That's fine. But to say he's the greatest heel ever, what are you talking about? Oh, you didn't see him in NXT as a heel? Yeah, I did, and nobody was paying attention. He was the NXT champion as a heel, and he didn't get one more viewer to that show, not one. If he's such a good heel, how come instantaneously when Finn Balor became NXT champion, we didn't see a 50,000, 75,000, 100,000 boost in rating? Because nobody cared. I told you he wasn't the guy. People, I don't know for what reason, that Finn Balor has this cult of people who think he's just the greatest, but I'm telling you he's not. Enjoying him and saying I like his matches is one thing. Just blatantly lying and saying he's great at this, no, he's not. He's just not. Oh, you hear the people when he comes out? Yeah, because he has an entrance where people get to participate. Just like Robert Roode. Is Robert Roode the greatest? Where's Robert Roode? Remember when everybody would come out and sing along with him? Anything that the audience can participate in, they're going to do it. And then it makes you look like you're over when really it's just your theme song that's over. He's just not that over, folks. If he was that over as a face, they wouldn't have flipped him heel. And now that they flipped him heel, he's not over. So what is it going to take to get Finn Balor over? Put back on that paint and let him crawl to the ring again for one appearance? Is that how far you got to go to get over? An alter ego character you do once in a blue moon? It's just not over. I would argue that Cesaro is not only a better wrestler, but was actually better on the mic. And Cesaro wasn't good. I think he was better than Finn Balor. So, I mean, listen, it's in the eye of the beholder, Todd, but I just don't, you know, when people say ridiculous things like Finn Balor should be the top guy, I can't wait for him to get the championship as a heel, they must be insane. That's not happening.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said about the Finn Balor thing. Like you said, I don't like his style or anything. When he wrestles the demon, he wrestles the same way. And to me, you'll probably agree with me on this. To me, he's highly overrated.
I think he's overrated too. I think he's a great athlete. But, here's what I think about Finn Balor. If you want me to be really honest, I'm just going to be really honest. Here's what I think about Finn Balor. I think Finn Balor is a great athlete who stopped trying about 3 years ago. I think he's one of those guys who just says, look, I'll do my five moves, get my paycheck, and go home. This is going nowhere. I don't really care. I think that's where he's at right now. I'll do the bare minimum I have to do to earn my paycheck and go home. I don't think he's that guy who says, I still got fire in my belly and I want to be the champion. I just don't think so. Now, you could argue the WWE beat him down with, you know, and that's why he feels that way. Okay. Maybe that's the truth. But you're never going to get anywhere with that attitude. And he's not the only one who had that attitude. Randy Orton had that attitude for a long time until he got hooked up with Riddle. And then all of a sudden, boom. So if you got something you can do with Finn Balor, I mean, listen, I thought they were on the right track with Finn Balor. When they had AJ Styles and Finn Balor, I said, if you could possibly manage to get Gallows and Anderson back, you'd have something. You'd have something decent. Even if you wanted to try with Shinsuke. But then, you know, that's getting convoluted because those three guys are not good on the mic, all three of them. You really need somebody who's good on the mic, and Gallows and Anderson are. So you sort of need them. If you had them, you might have had something. But instead, you decided, no, Finn ain't working out here. We're going to make him the leader. And then they have to really retract it because he's so bad at being the leader. That they have to say, well, there is no leader. We're all equal. We're all equal. Who takes the microphone first all the time? Finn Balor. Who walks down ahead of everybody else? Finn Balor. Don't tell me Finn Balor's not the leader. It's just that he's not good at it, so you say, well, there isn't one, to cover up the fact that he's not good at it. So, yeah, I mean, that's my opinion on Finn Balor. I think he's mailing it in a lot of the time. And I don't think you're going to get successful mailing it in a lot of the time. I just don't. Now, again, he might go a little bit farther because Triple H likes him, I'm sure. Triple H likes Ricochet, I'm sure. The debate is now that Triple H is in charge, is some of the people that Vince McMahon was pushing, are they going to get kind of thrown off the cliff? I don't know. Very possible. Triple H is now going to promote the guys that he feels is the guys he wants to run with, and that's his right to do. But I do think that if I were to be put in charge of creative, I would put all of my biases aside and say, let me just judge fan reaction. Let me see who's really over and who isn't. I'm not going to force anybody on anybody. I'm going to give people good storylines and see. Let's see what happens. If they're not into them, they're not into them. If they're into them, they're into them. If they're not into them, my writer's job is to make you into them. So in other words, let's say I say I'm going to give the Alpha Academy a real shot here. And the fans just, it's not working. Then I go to my writers and say, you got to come up with something different for these two guys. They're very talented. Otis is very talented. Chad Gable is very talented. But the way we're presenting them, they're not buying, so you need to come up with something different. See, that's the way you handle it. You don't just throw them under the bus and say, well, that didn't work. Okay, what was a lousy idea? Of course it didn't work. It's the same thing with the Judgment Day. Judgment Day's not working. So instead of just throwing them under the bus and saying, well, we tried to get Rhea Ripley over, and she's a knob, and she's not going to get over. We tried getting Damian Priest, and he's cardboard cut out. He's not getting over. Finn's terrible. He's not getting over. Fuck it. No. You go to the writers and say, Judgment Day's not working. We need something for these people because they're talented. What can we do to get these people over? Certainly, you should be able to come up with something. That's your job. That's your job. Finn Balor should be, I know it's on a different show, but Finn Balor should be tooth and nail with Butch, right? That's the two guys I want to see fight. Send him over there. Let him and Butch have a program together. I'll buy into that. That'd be fun to watch. Rhea Ripley, for her size and her ability, you can't get her over. And Damian Priest, listen. I think you made a mistake with Damian Priest. I don't necessarily think a heel turn was the best thing for him. I think that you went too far with that Jekyll and Hyde character. But I don't think it was necessarily a bad thing that you showed a little of that. In other words, if you said, look, this is a guy who normally, he's a dangerous guy. He's not been a clean-cut dude his whole life. He's not some dude who grew up going to a fancy school and went to college and, you know, whatever. He's a street dude. And he's had his brushes with bad things. Tried to straighten his life out here, and he's trying to, you know, be a normal guy. But you push him a little far, that violent side comes out. And he's not above doing some bad things to you. That's a good enough gimmick for him. That's all you needed to do. Didn't need to make him freak out and say there's a two people inside me. Now, come on. How come we ain't seen that in Judgment Day, huh? Didn't you push that for how long? How come we haven't seen it? Because you think we forgot. And that's what they always do, Todd. They just start things and then say, forget it. The fans probably forgot about it.
You're absolutely right, Dio, like you said about what's going on with Finn Balor again. Well, like I said, I would replace him with Karrion Kross. I think if he would fit in Judgment Day, I think he would fit in really good, more intimidated as a dark guy.
I'll tell you that. Listen, that would not have been a bad idea. Could you imagine if you had Karrion Kross and Scarlett instead of you could put Damian Priest in there, too. I don't know about Rhea, maybe Rhea. Just lose Finn. Let Finn go over as this underdog face who is always bucking the odds. He's like Daniel Bryan. Yes, Daniel Bryan turned heel and wasn't bad. But Daniel Bryan's greatest success, because Daniel Bryan's brilliant on the microphone. So he was able to cut it. But Daniel Bryan's greatest successes were when I'm the underdog. I'm a small guy. I'm not super powerful. I have to struggle to beat bigger opponents. But I never say die. I never quit. I'm just going head-to-head with these guys. And sometimes I succeed. That's the gimmick that Finn Balor has to have. And if you want to occasionally have somebody do something so horrific to Finn Balor that it brings out the demon character, I'm okay with that. But then you got to call Finn Balor aside and say, look, when the entrance is over, you have to act differently as the demon. You can't just wrestle as Finn Balor in war paint. You have to have a different moveset. You have to sell differently. You have to act differently so we can put that over. Otherwise, it's just you in war paint and a different entrance. Foley do that with the three faces of Foley, or did he come out totally different every time with totally different moveset? That's what you need. There's ways to use Finn Balor. I'm not sitting here saying, oh, fire Finn Balor. No, I don't think you should fire Finn Balor. I think Finn Balor has a lot to contribute. But to sit there and say he should be the champion and should be the top heel, that's insane. You want to talk about a recipe for disaster and no rate. Let Finn play to his strengths. His strength is, I'm a normal guy, below average size, above average athletic ability. I'm in the land of the giants, trying to work my way to the top, and I'm the underdog. But I'm tough to beat. That's the guy I want to see. Then I'll get behind him. As everybody should fear me because I'm so powerful and wonderful. No, nobody's going to fear you, dude. You're practically a midget. I mean, you know, and then Finn Balor says, I want total control over my demon character. Why? So you're an invincible guy at 5'6", 170 pounds? It doesn't make any sense. So I don't know, Mike. We'll see what happens with him. But if you ask me, I'd rather see Finn Balor wrestle a program with Butch from the Brawling Brutes than I would be the leader of the Judgment Day.
Right, and think about this. You know, you're looking at him, and you're looking at Butch. You're about the same size. Maybe Butch is a tad bit bigger. Maybe. All right. But Butch looks bigger because he's got a little, just his looks. He's bigger. All right. He just looks that way. Now, here's the deal. We're talking about how good on the mic and all that stuff and changing moves. Let's look at Cesaro. Cesaro yeah, you know what you're going to get when you see Cesaro wrestle, but he gets to his moveset on a match-by-match basis in different ways. And you go and you go back this week to this week's Dynamite and watch his promo with the championship belt. Tell me that that promo is infinitely better than what is not infinitely better than what any promo that Finn Balor has done in the last, say, 6 months.
No, I agree with you. And you see, Cesaro was smart in his choice of moves. Yes, he had moves he did all the time, the uppercut, the Cesaro swing, the suplex thing. There were moves that you said he's going to do those moves at some point in this match. But how he got to them and things that happened in between were always different. Finn Balor's always the same. Sling blade, drop kick you, mule drop kicks you into the corner. And this is, I'm going up for bombs away. Yeah, we get it. He crashes in the corner and goes, I don't like it. I don't like it when Rey Mysterio does it with a 619 either. It seems like that's all the match is about, is how do I get him in a position. But at least Rey Mysterio's move of kicking you directly in the face really doesn't matter whether you're the size of Otis or the size of Mustafa Ali. It does matter. The bombs away does matter, depending on how big you are. That shouldn't even hurt him. Problem. And to compare Finn Balor, even in the ring, to AJ Styles, in my opinion, is ludicrous. AJ Styles has developed three finishers that work on a regular basis, that has won him matches on a regular basis, the Phenomenal Forearm, the Styles Clash, and the Calf Crusher. He has won matches, important matches, against big names with all three of those moves. When you establish that, you know what that does? That means when you see somebody in that move, you're not sure if it's the end of the match or not. You know for sure it's not the end of the match with Finn Balor unless the bombs away hit. Because he's only got the one. Oh, there may be others that they say, that's going to finish him, but it never does. Just like Sheamus's white noise. Every time I hear the announcers say, white noise, that's going to do it. No, it never does. So why should it do it now? With AJ Styles, all three of those moves have indeed done it. That's the difference right there. The psychology is so much better in an AJ Styles match for a fan because you're never quite sure which one of these finishers is the finisher. Look how he got into the finals of the U.S. title match. What a great way to get to the Styles Clash, right? It wasn't typical. It wasn't the same old thing. No. Crusher a lot of times. It's not the typical way he gets into it. There's always a way, and Cesaro's very much the same way. That's why I like those type of wrestlers. Cesaro could get into his signature moves, Mike, but they were always done in ways that you didn't expect or weren't typical.
Right, right, and that's the thing. And think about this. Here's another good example of what you're doing. Riddle. He has several finishing maneuvers, including the RKO, that – you don't know which one is going to work on which given night, and you don't know if he's going to be the Bro Derek or the Bro Mission or the RKO, you know? You don't know because all of them at given times have worked as his finishing maneuver in multiple, and he gets to them, and he's learned. See, that's the difference. Riddle has learned that you have to be spontaneous in what you do in the ring. Because it's not just that he does these moves. It's that you don't know which one of these moves that he's going to end the match with on any given night, Riddle.
Oh, well, absolutely. But even Randy Orton. Randy Orton has one finisher, the RKO, but look how he gets the RKO every time. Very different every time. Now, in the chat room, Tom's saying, you know, Liv Morgan had the meltdown. Yeah, we did the first 30 minutes of the show on it. Listen, The bottom line is, I'll reiterate what I said at the beginning. The WWE booked her terribly. They booked her as a heel. I don't care what anybody says. Every action she took from turning in the briefcase on a clearly injured Ronda Rousey and barely winning to getting beaten like a drum at SummerSlam and tapping out before taking an undeserved victory to coming out on SmackDown and lying to the crowd and saying, I didn't tap out until after the three count, which is clearly not true, is something a heel does. And we had said that her salvation should have been she should have relinquished the belt on SmackDown, saying this is not the way I wanted to be the champion. I don't deserve to be the champion. I'm relinquishing it. They could have then said Ronda Rousey cannot be the champion because she's suspended for her actions. However, we will have a gauntlet match on SmackDown, and the winner of that will fight you at Clash at the Castle, and the winner of that will be the champion. Then, if she had to turn to the crowd and said, is that good enough? The crowd would have been on her side 100%, and they would have been like, yes, 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 yes. And she would have said, okay, I accept. And you still would have had the same match, Shayna Baszler versus Liv Morgan, only it would be for the women's championship, and she would have been a big face. But instead, they decided to get her to lie to the audience and say, I didn't tap out until after. Well, no, you clearly did. Clearly did. So that's a disgrace. But that's bad writing. Bad writing is infecting the WWE. And Triple H is not the ultimate savior of that. And I'm going to tell you right now, he's not the ultimate savior of that, because if his brand of wrestling was so goddamn popular, how come they couldn't beat AEW and NXT when he had full control? So for everybody who's saying this is going to be the new era, Triple H is going to, he might make some improvements. I already see some improvements. But I'm not expecting this to be the ultimate switcheroo, because Triple H did plenty of things in NXT that was terrible. Why do you think AEW was kicking their ass every week? Because he was promoting guys that nobody were interested in. Oh, you're going to be the champion. You're going to be the number one contender. Yeah, well, we don't like those guys. They have no personality. Oh, not too bad. I like them. Okay, well, then you like them. But unfortunately, the ratings did not bear that out. So don't do it this time, Triple H. Take a good hard look at your lineup. And run with the people that the audience likes and want. Talking about a small minority of indie wrestling fans who say Finn Balor should be the champion for life. Go take a poll in the WWE's audience and see if anybody thinks Finn Balor should be the champion. And I guarantee you there'll be about 4% that says yes. And 96% would be like, fuck no. So that's the minority. I mean, you can say all you want about Roman Reigns. You can say, he's not a good wrestler, he's not really that good on the mic, blah, 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 blah. Some bitch draws, and the fans care. Don't tell me they don't. I hear when he comes out. Oh, they pump that in. No, they don't. There's people standing on their goddamn feet. There's signs. What do? They pencil in them signs, do they? He is a draw. I'm not going to replace that with Finn Balor. Oh, boy, that'll sell out WrestleMania. Finn Balor against somebody. Can't wait to buy my tickets and fly from Lord knows where into WrestleMania. See, Finn Balor. Main event WrestleMania. I'm sorry, folks. That's insane. That's insane. That's like saying, I love this indie band, and I want them to be the headliners in Madison Square Garden. Okay, well. Ain't going to be nobody there. I don't care how good of a band they are. If they're barely selling out 1,000-seat auditorium, they're selling out Madison Square Garden. And I don't care if you think, Drake is the stupidest, least talented person on the face of the earth, he probably would sell it out. And that's what it's all about. Get out of your head. It's about the person with the most talent. There's not one single aspect of the entertainment industry, including wrestling, where it's all about the talent. Not music, not acting, not wrestling, none of it. It's not about talent. If it was about talent, even Seagal wouldn't exist in the world of acting. If it was about talent, there's a whole bunch of punk bands and other bands that wouldn't exist in the world of music. The Clash couldn't tune their own instruments, and they admitted it. Until the last several years of their career, they couldn't even tune their own instruments. They were sensational. They were selling out stadiums. So don't tell me it's about talent. The most talented actor is not the most popular. The most talented band is not the most popular. And the most talented wrestler is not the most popular. That's just the way it is. You're confusing it because you're confusing wrestling with a sport, which it isn't. You're saying, well, the best athlete should be the champion. Wrong. Because it's not real. To a movie? Do you say, well, the best kung fu fighter should be the hero of the movie, not Van Damme? If there's some guys in this Van Damme movie that are legitimate black belt experts, they should kick his ass. No, that's not the way it works. You see Tom Cruise running around as Jack Reacher kicking everybody's ass, right? You think those guys, his ass is kicking, he could kick in real life? Can Al Reeves kicking everybody's ass? Think he's kicking everybody's ass in real life? Half of those stunt doubles wipe the floor with him. But it doesn't matter because it's not real. You're promoting a character. You're promoting John Wick. You're promoting Jack Reacher, not Keanu Reeves and Tom Cruise. The same thing with wrestling. Finn Balor is a character. It doesn't matter how great an athlete he is. It's about the drawing power. Because it's not a real sport. It's an entertainment venue. That's what it is. It's where all these people are making their mistakes. They just keep saying over and over again, the best athlete should be the champion. No. You don't do that with movies. You don't say the best actor should be the lead. No, you never do that with movies. The most talented musician should sell the most records. They don't. Get over it. Look at wrestling for what it is. It's a television show. It's not real. The most interesting characters are the ones who should be on top. You don't watch a sitcom and say, you know, that guy that plays the neighbor is a better actor than the lead, so they should make a whole show about him and forget the lead. You know, they're not going to do that. It's the same thing with wrestling, Mike. I don't know why people don't get that.
Right. And another thing is we want our expectations to be subverted, right? Think about it. What made Die Hard, the original Die Hard, so the classic that it became, right? Think about it. At that time, what was most of these action movies doing, right? Arnold Schwarzenegger, big muscle man, you know, overdone muscle right. Men like Sylvester Stallone and Rambo and all these other people. Even to some extent, Bruce Lee type with who was in great Van Damme in great shape, right? You know, whereas yep. Bruce Willis in that role as John McClane looked like what your normal smallish type person. You could have been him, right? You could have been John
right.
McClane.
Yeah,
you know?
He's the everyman, and that's exactly what the WWE had at one time with Kevin Owens, when they were saying, we're showing Kevin Owens at the movies with his kids, bowling with his kids, saying, I'm not watching my diet, I'm eating popcorn, I'm eating pizza, but I can fight. And then you brought him back and had to kiss Shane McMahon's ass and say, I'll do whatever you want me to do because you're the boss, and even though I hate you, I have to feed my family, instead of being the rebel and saying, I'll find a different way to feed my family before I'll bow before you. See, that's what killed Kevin Owens' everyman character, because he was supposed to be us. And we were saying, no, we wouldn't put up with that from Shane McMahon. We'd tell Shane McMahon to kiss our ass. We're not cheating for Shane McMahon. Kevin Owens, in his character, said, okay, I'll cheat for you. And then he lost everybody. That's bad writing. Trying to save his wife, but he's having an affair. You lose the audience. You understand? You lose the audience because you say, well, he's not a virtuous guy. That's why they don't write it that way. And that's why the WWE writers are not very good, because I don't think they understand just basic writing psychology of how you actually make someone likable, relatable, and interesting, or how you make someone extremely hated. I don't think they get it, because they want to play this game of, we want to make them look more like it's athletes, like it's a sport. It's not a sport. Stop pretending it's a sport. It's not. And just go for the entertainment value. Make them interesting. That's what you got to do. I hope Triple H understands that. Triple H is going to be remembered for in his career. You know, if I could talk to Triple H and give him any advice, like he needs it from me, but if I could, I would say, before you take the reins in WWE, please, please, go through your own history and remember what you're most noted for. Hitting people with a sledgehammer, doing a crotch chop, telling people to suck it, dressing up like Vince McMahon, going and storming the studios of a rival federation in an army tank. Those are all entertainment things. You're not remembered for your flawless pedigree. You're not remembered for, oh, this one particular move you did. No. What you're remembered for are those moments. And rightfully so, because they were great moments. But they didn't all take place in the ring. And they weren't all about wrestling. They were about entertainment, Todd. And that's what I think is the main issue.
I actually like that, like you said, about what's going on here. And, you know, it is true. I agree with you on this thing right here.
It's got to be, Mike, if it's Triple H's baby, he's got to really go back in his career, put his ego aside and say, was I remembered for flawless athletic ability in the ring? No, you obviously weren't, because you weren't flawless athletically. What I remembered for those special moments that somebody wrote for me that were so cool and so interesting and so much fun that 20 years later people are still talking about.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. The other thing he's remembered for is, and it's a bad thing, is when him and Stephanie were in control and they were doing the authority gimmick, that, remember the whole thing about them not wanting to show ass?
Yep. You know?
When they were doing, and the best example of that was when the Big Show signed that contract that said he could go anywhere and do anywhere and do anything he wanted to, and he ended up being a crier and a wimp because Triple H, you know, didn't want to show ass. Whereas we know what we would have done with that. You know, Triple H would have told him to do something. He would have turned around on him and said, "I'm gonna hit you with the WMD and knock your ass out." You know.
Exactly, and Derek saying, "Well, when he crashed Stephanie's wedding and married her when she was unconscious, yes, and the Katie Vick thing, yes, but those are all moments." That's what I'm saying. Favor, if you're listening to this show, talk to wrestling fans about a wrestler, any wrestler, and say, what's your favorite moment? And I bet you 99% of them are actions rather than wrestling moves. Oh, remember when Kurt Angle was afraid of his own pyro? Remember when he stole the Undertaker's motorcycle? Remember when he put on the cowboy hat and was singing Kumbaya? Remember when they drove the milk truck in? Yeah, those moments. Those are what we need more of. So the people who like Jim Cornette were making fun of Brock Lesnar tipping over the ring with the front loader. Jim, those are wrestling moments. People are going to remember that. Anyway, we'll see what brings on Monday night for Monday Night Raw, and we will be back here on Tuesday to talk about it. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.